I'm going to start with something that might be familiar to some of you. If not here, where will joy come? If not here, where will joy come? That line may sound familiar to some of you. It's the last line of the poem that Lyndall shared with us last Sunday during her talk on happiness. The poem is by a very celebrated 5th century Chinese poet known by several names, Dao Qian and Dao Yuan Ming are two of them. I loved the poem. The title is On Reading the Classic of Mountains and Seas. I loved it because it describes so well one particular moment of simple presence and the contentment that accompanied that presence. It was a wonderful example for me of the happiness that the Buddha called sukha in Pali. In that poem, the poet says, among other things, I enjoy my humble place, plowing's done, the ground is sown, time to sit and read my book. A light rain from the east blows in on a pleasant breeze. I could really identify with that. Work done, I'm going to sit down with my book and also connect with nature. But it's not just the connection to the setting. The last line, which is a question, really resonated with me. If not here, where will joy come? Since we started studying the three kinds of joy this year that are part of transcendent dependent arising, those three are pamoja, rapture, and now sukha, I've thought a lot about happiness and unhappiness. I think Zen calls it the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows. We know that life is a mix of conditions. We know about life's vicissitudes called the 8 worldly winds, a pleasure and pain, loss and gain, praise and blame, fame and disrepute. We've talked a lot about the two kinds of happiness this month, worldly happiness and otherworldly happiness, sometimes called spiritual happiness. We're conditioned to want worldly happiness, starting in our preschool years, and to believe that it's possible to live happily ever after. That message continues into adulthood through advertising. If you buy this product or service, you will be happy. And as the pictures or words might have us imagine, you will be happily ever after, or just keep buying it and you'll be happy ever after. And we know that as humans, we're subject to the pairing of the feeling tones of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral with every sensory contact. And that sets up the drive to want, attach, and cling. So it's no wonder that we look outward to these objects and conditions for our happiness. But because of the impermanence of all conditioned phenomena, we can't escape disappointment if we hold to the illusion that the conditions will continue on happily ever after, or that we have much control over the objects of our desires. Someone shared a story about a Buddhist practitioner this month that I liked. This person was asked by a Buddhist practitioner friend, did she think that he and a woman he had met at a retreat had a chance of having a successful marriage? She surprised herself by answering, you might have success as long as you don't expect the marriage to make you happy. The reason I liked the question, if not here, where will joy come, is because it points to joy being available always, right here, now. And if that is so, what does that mean? Instead of waiting for a better time or better conditions until all the if-onlys are satisfied and the ducks are in a row, We need to let go of that kind of wishful thinking and delusion of perfection. We have to take a deep look at our attachments. Not that we have to let go of every pleasure. We just need to see if we're being enchanted by certain things. My daughter loved sparkles when she was little. If it was shiny, she loved it. I once saw a painting by Miro, and the title was Poem to the Glory of Sparkles. I thought Caitlin would love that. I know that I also have added layers of sparkles and shine to many objects of my desires so that they became very enchanting to me. And I believe that if or when I had that, I would be happy. And I think most of us know it just doesn't work that way. But it seems like for a long time, I forget. And maybe this time. Carrie said in her talk a few weeks ago that Pema Chodron says, in our practice, we're learning to collaborate with reality. So there's both dukkha, the not so good fit, and sukha, the good fit. So I'll just recall for people who don't know the dukkha, the word dukkha in Pali describes the bad fit of a wheel on an axle of a chariot. So you can imagine this bumpy ride and things just don't work. It's unsatisfactory. That's kind of the image that goes with dukkha. And sukha, in contrast, perfect fit. Everything works so smoothly. It's a good fit. So that's where those words come from. If sukha is a kind of spiritual, otherworldly happiness, the access to it might lead through what feels like dukkha sometimes. That's based on what we've learned about transcendent dependent arising, that out of dukkha comes faith and the rest of that path. So remembering that the second stage of transcendent dependent arising is faith arising from unsatisfactoriness might be a good idea as we contemplate sukha. Faith leads to a different kind of happiness. Pamoja, both faith and pamoja are uplifting and contribute to our confidence that we can move forward even in the presence of dukkha. Even when we don't feel that happiness is here right now, we can still know there is a path to it. There are ways we can open some gates. We don't have to stay stuck on the other side of the fence. When we look at a description of what sukha is, we can see clues as to how to become available, as Philip Moffat advises us, to this kind of happiness. It's important to become available even if we can't control the arising of happiness. So sukha follows tranquility in the transcendent dependent arising sequence, and it has the flavor of calm, with being satisfied with where one is. Nothing needs to be added. When thinking about sukha on the cushion, as well as in daily life, simplicity seems to be a key factor. When things get too complex, there's more possibility of entanglement and confusion, which interfere with present moment awareness and calm and satisfaction. Here are a few examples of how simplicity in practice can help move us forward on the path toward the ultimate contentment. The first one comes from Ajahn Sumedho, one of the senior forest refuge Theravada teachers. Ajahn Sumedho tells the story of when he first became a monk at Ajahn Chah's monastery in Thailand. He was frustrated by his inability to speak or understand Thai. He couldn't understand the Dhamma talks, and he asked himself, how am I going to learn about my mind and about consciousness if I can't understand what Ajahn Chah is saying? He thought, what is consciousness anyway? I need an English dictionary so I can look up the definition of consciousness. Then he thought, wait a minute, I'm conscious. Which of course led him to the direct experience of observing his own consciousness and gaining insight into this important element of Dhamma. The second example comes from Joseph Goldstein, who must have had a similar issue when he began studying with his teacher, Munindraji, in India. Joseph reports that when he started meditating, Munindra said to him simply, "If you want to learn about the mind, sit down and observe it." The third example, and one of my favorites, which I've shared many times, also comes from Joseph's teacher, Munindra. It's the instruction to sit and know you are sitting, and the whole of the Dhamma will be revealed. This instruction is, for me, similar to the line in the poem, "If not here, where can joy be found?" Our breathing and the present moment are always here with us. They are both elements of mindfulness. Isn't this a good place to start being available to happiness? So before I go on with a little bit more on simplicity, I just want to add something that I thought was interesting. I was looking for the Tao Qian poem that Linda shared because I wanted to read it again. I was looking online and I kept looking and I kept finding different translations, but the last line was never the same as the one that I liked that Linda read. And then I looked on my own bookshelf and the title of the collection that I had of this same poet was Choosing to Be Simple. So I thought that was just kind of, coincidental, something like that. So in daily life, simplicity goes along with appreciation, gratitude, and even renunciation, all of which have been talked about this month as leading to happiness. So I'm just going to add this take on that theme, which has inspired me. It comes from Ajahn Sundara. She was one of the first nuns ordained by Ajahn Sumedho at his monastery in Amaravati in England. And she gave a talk at Seattle Insight when I first started practicing there. She was explaining about how monastics feel gratitude for what is offered rather than gratitude for getting what they want. They just frame it a little differently. She explained that since they don't have much control over getting their needs and wants met, they are more open to noticing and appreciating what is offered to them each day. We lay people who have more control over getting our needs and wants met spend a lot of time strategizing in order to be successful in getting what we want and maybe being frustrated by not getting what we want. There are many simple things that we take for granted or overlook because we don't ask ourselves, what has been offered to me today? For monastics, the offerings stand out and are easier to notice and appreciate. Gratitude and appreciation lead to experiencing enough, which leads to happiness. While sometimes experiencing too much can get in the way of that. Another simple element connected to appreciation and gratitude that can lead to happiness is asking the question, what did I learn today? One teacher starts her day with the question, what can I learn about my mind today? We could just as easily ask a question about other objects of the four foundations of mindfulness. What can I learn from my heart today? What can I learn about my feelings today? What can I learn about my body today? This is a way to move away from making judgments, which can cause so much unhappiness. This question, what can I learn today, or what did I learn today, can lead toward the happiness of non-preferential observation. We can think of ourselves as learners who try out, observe, and learn from what we try out. And all this leads to a sense of, You know, it's okay. And that's one of the qualities of sukha. It's okay. I don't need to add anything. Calm contentment. It's okay. This idea comes from some forgiveness phrases created by Eric Kolvig, who gives forgiveness meditation retreats. Two phrases he suggests we try are, I allow myself to be a learner, still learning life's lessons. I forgive myself. So instead of criticizing, you just say, I'm a learner. I forgive myself. It's okay. And also, I allow you to be a learner, still learning life's lessons. I forgive you. So, a way to have the happiness of non-judgment. It's okay. So simplicity and appreciation can help open the gates of sukha. But what about when we are between a rock and a hard place? How do we go from unhappy to happy when more than opening a gate is called for? I've been thinking about this because, as Pema Chodron says, our practice involves collaborating with reality, and reality includes dukkha and sukha. If not here, where? Well, when what here is in the middle of dukkha, it can be challenging. At these times, I think we have to get very close to the dukkha in a bodily sense, not in a thinking about it sense. We need to pay attention to any holding or contraction in the body where dukkha might be hiding out. Our natural inclination is to look the other way if we can. The three poisons or defilements of greed, hatred, and delusion, and the five hindrances of desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, agitation and worry, and doubt are not pleasant. So resistance is often the first reaction in our body and mind. At the same time that we pay attention to resistance, it's important to know how relaxation and calm feel in the body, because relaxation and calm are antidotes to resistance. And finding even small amounts of subtle shades of calm and relaxation can be helpful. So you can feel the contraction or the holding with an attitude of, this is good to know. I can be with it. You don't have to label it, just allow it. It can help to breathe with or through the felt sense of it. It's going to move or change anyway. Relax, observe, allow. I remember saying one time, you know, allowing is a kind of form of loving. So this kind of goes with metta, I think. This might be a time to remember the first step in transcendental dependent arising, that faith arises from dukkha. And you might think this is not good, but something good might come out of it. Sometimes we may not be in a place of directly encouraging happiness, but we can remove the obstructions to happiness. And we can remember, too, that relaxed breathing leads to relaxed body, leads to relaxed mind. Different parts of the body are connected and communicate with each other. And tranquility is a relaxed state, which is the supportive condition that gives rise to sukha. One teacher, Gil Fronsdal, who's the guiding teacher at Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California, suggests that we investigate dukkha in a pair with its seeming opposite, non-dukkha. Customarily, we talk about something being one way or the other. But in the Dhamma, it's helpful, he says, to think of not either or, but of and. It's not just suffering, and it's not just happiness. You can feel suffering and know it with a knowing that is free of stress, contraction, and tension. He suggests that we meditate on the quality of our inner life in this way, because we will find that as we go deeper through the layers, we discover that pleasant and unpleasant coexist side by side. For example, when we soften our resistance to painful experiences, compassion often arises, and can support us staying with these experiences long enough to learn and understand them. Compassion, while not a happy state, is a wholesome one. It's not an obstruction, like, say, despair is. Compassion feels tender and connected and alive. So there is dukkha, our pain, and in the deeper layers of our being, there is awareness of dukkha. They're not in conflict. They're in relationship. Gil Fronsdal says that in this meeting place, you can find stability and even freedom. So let's ask, if not here in our heart of hearts, where can joy be found? And remember to look inward for it. That's my end of my talk. So we have time to discuss what we're learning about happiness or unhappiness together. And I would say, yeah, what have you been learning about where to find reliable, durable happiness and where it's not found? Kind of looking at both sides of the coin. And I think we did breakout groups last time. Did we do breakout groups? Who remembers? We did. Okay, so let's do a whole group, and we're getting towards the end of the month. There is another talk next Sunday, but maybe we can just kind of sit with sukha and dukkha and think about where we find sukha. How do you find it? That's more reliable, more durable. Suze, go ahead. Thank you.
I had this experience this morning. I'm an avid obituary reader, and so reading the obituaries, and sometimes the year, how old the person is, really affects me, as I just turned 82, and I found myself reading some of these and could feel the change in my breath, kind of like a gasp thing. But right next to it, right after that, was the kind of full-bodied experience of gratitude for being alive. And it was just kind of what you're talking about, that both and of the dukkha, like, and then the sukha. And so thanks for putting those words to my experience.
Thank you, Suze. Judith.
Hi, thanks for the talk, Lauren. I really enjoyed it. I just spent a week with my family, and I was thinking about Ram Dass saying, if you think you're enlightened, go spend a week with your family, right? And these are my kids and their wives and my grandson, and they're wonderful people, all of them. And I found myself getting extremely irritated when they thought that I couldn't do something that I could do, right? Because I'm old. And that happened several times, and I mean, I didn't, you know, complain to them too much, but I found myself getting irritated. And then as I'm coming home, I was thinking about that. And then I realized, well, I'm very grateful for all the perks of being old, that I get the good bedroom, right? Where I don't have to go up and down the stairs to go to the bathroom, and all the ways in which I benefit, but I want them to know exactly what I can do and what I can't do. And I was thinking also about the fact that they have all been dealing with parents getting ill, parents dying, or other members of their family. And so I was really aware of how I'm focusing on what I don't like rather than focusing on what I do like. And I remember, I think, I maybe with Suze, I don't remember, somebody thinking, saying, well, think about what is right, what is good, what's not wrong in this situation, and how I focus on the irritations and how childish it felt, you know? It was a very, very interesting experience. Yeah.
Thank you, Judith. Yeah, irritation. it's such a small thing. I get irritated too, and then I get angry with myself for being irritated. So
yes, there, that's the next step, right?
Right. So, but it's okay being with it. That would be, you know, it's okay, and then just learn about it.
Right. Yeah. Right, and that's where I came to. Oh, yeah. I guess I learned something from this. Yeah,
because you said that it was, what did you say? Childish? Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like that?
And you didn't, you know, you don't want to be childish.
No, I don't.
It's not a place to be. Okay, Nina, thank you. You're unmuted. You need to unmute, Nina.
I really liked your talk. Thank you. I'm going to have to disagree with the both of you. I've been feeling a couple of times when I was like irritated, laughing at myself, being childish, and thinking about, you know, all the monks and how they're always laughing at themselves or laughing at when they're talking about dukkha. And so I think for me, that's a way to find happiness in just mundane thoughts. And I just wanted to say that.
Yeah. No, I think it's really a great point, because you're not taking yourself seriously. See, the dukkha comes from thinking, oh, I'm a bad person. I shouldn't, you know, that is definitely going to bring dukkha. So you are actually skipped that and went straight to, oh, let's have fun with this. You know, this is not worth
that. This is so stupid. What am I thinking?
Right. Yeah, that's acceptance. That's cool. Thanks for sharing that. Hi, Lyndall, go ahead.
Thanks, Nina, for bringing that up, because I was thinking about that too, that one source of happiness sometimes can be just recognizing just the plain goofiness of my own mind, you know. I mean, I had on this last retreat with Carrie and Tim, I had a really goofy experience. We were doing metta, and I was sitting there offering metta to my cousin, and she was sitting on the couch with her cats on top of her, which is kind of goofy in itself. But all of a sudden, in my mind's eye, this big horde of old men with long hair and long beards in grass skirts came rushing down this hill toward me. And I was like, where the heck did you come from? And then it was like, oh, okay, well, you're here. Fine, you can have metta too. And I was still just thinking, where does this goofy stuff come from? And, you know, you can't sort of criticize yourself. It's so not me, not mine. It's just goofy stuff. So very weird and funny things can arise from the mind. And it's kind of nice to appreciate that. Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that, because one of the things Carrie said, she talked about not taking yourself seriously. You know, it's a way of thinning yourself. It's a way of being less, because that's definitely a way to find happiness, calm and peace, have less ego and less, you know, self-protection. So I think, yeah, I think that's just another example. Thank you. Candace, go ahead.
Hi, I love that. I'm still laughing about Lindell's vision. But I had a funny situation the other day. A friend, a neighbor, emailed me that she needed help. She's working on a memoir and she's just, you know, losing it about, you know, where to start and what to cover and all of this. And I felt this wonderful, oh, yay, I always love to go over to her garden and I always love to be with her. So I'm glad she has a problem. And then I thought, what a weird reaction to somebody saying help. But it turned out to be lots of fun. And you know, we did a lot of laughing. But I thought, isn't that interesting? Just that I was needed, and that made me so happy. And I was needed in a particular place with a particular friend I really liked to be with, and that made it even better. And I just thought, that's okay. Look at this happiness that arose. You know, it's making me very happy to help her, you know, and I keep reiterating to her, anytime, I'm right here, you know, because it's just so wonderful to be with her. And I thought, you know, two things. One was that love to be needed that just makes us feel good. And the other one was having a friend that you just thinking about her makes me happy. And just, you know, it isn't the kind of thing that's usually on your list of things that make me happy. But yeah, just having this friend.
Yeah. So that was offered to you. It just came. You didn't even know you wanted it. And there it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Your happiness is kind of contagious. Liz, go ahead.
All right. Still kind of giggling about Lindell's horde of old yes. Bearded men coming down the hill. I really, that was a great talk. Thank you very much. I really wish, sometimes I could tap in to that sense of humor, you know, that Nina was talking about. I thought of specifically an incident last weekend. My husband and I, we took my daughter camping. We had a fabulous weekend. And then at the end, you know, packing up, kind of, we got in a little snafu of an argument. And, it wasn't super great, definitely, but I felt like we managed it better than maybe we had years ago, and partly able to wit for myself, there was a lot of factors that went into that. Part of that was that the idea of faith that this is just a moment. This is just a moment that's hard. This is a hard moment. I don't have to go straight in reacting in some way to whatever's going on. Like, it is just a moment of dukkha. And witnessing so much in myself that, and I think we've talked about this in other talks. Well, I know we have. But, you know, that idea of selfing is so much me. Oh, me, 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 me. And getting so caught up in the me. And I was like, I was seeing the me and going, okay, stop, settle it down. And there was a part of me that was also going, I wish I could find this funny. I really wish I could find this funny, but I can't. So I'm just gonna go, just, I don't know. I think I just went out and messed around in my garden when I got home. We both took space, you know, we needed space. And, you know, that's great. Because we came back together like couple, you know, I went to work, he went to work, came back together a couple days later. I'm a ghoul, you know? And yeah, really grateful for the insight. And hopefully someday I'll get to the humor somehow, some way, maybe. But yeah, it was a growing experience to witness each time when dukkha comes up. It isn't always necessarily dukkha. There's also a message, a growing with it, if I just have faith. Faith.
So there's dukkha and not dukkha was with it.
Exactly. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Liz. What else is out there? Oh, Faith. Yes, go ahead.
I was going to fiddle with finding the
hand. Yeah. You don't need to. You can just.
Thank you. So, well, first of all, I was reacting to Liz and thinking, I heard the funny and the joy implicit in your description. So I think you got it. And the other thing is, like, went immediately to my mother's death and my family gathering, and I'd been estranged. So it could have been, whoa, my father wasn't talking to me, hadn't seen one of my brothers for years. It could have been really, but instead, we played Monopoly. And my brother cheated the way he usually did. We all yelled and we laughed. And even my dad laughed and dandled my son on his knee. It wasn't like all was forgiven because he stopped talking to me again, but there was that moment of pure, sukha. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was joy. We were funny. We're always funny in my family. And so I thought of that kind of thing. You can combine the worst and the best in the weirdest, funniest, most wonderful ways. So
as Lyndall is a testimony to, right? Thank you. You know, I was just thinking as this is talk has gone towards a laughter, that really laughter is a form of relaxation. You know, it really can relax tension and release, can't it? It seems like that happened when the people experienced the ability to laugh. Go ahead, Thomas. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. This is a great discussion and a great talk, Lauren. So thanks a lot for that. And Liz, what you said made me sort of think about, you know, long relationships I'm in. And when you're in a long relationship, you know, over many, many years, you know, people grow and they do new things and so do you, you know, so things aren't the same as they were when you started out. And one thing I've been particularly interested in is sort of the conditions that I line up myself. And I would like my partner to do certain things, and there's certain things that they do I might be so happy about. And especially over time, it changes, you know, people do new things, I do new things, and my partner might not appreciate everything I'm doing. And so I worked a lot with that and sort of seeing those as conditions and sort of finding that I don't want to be run by these conditions. I want to, you know, give my partner freedom to pursue what they want to do. And I'm doing the same. And I was thinking about your relationship to happiness. One of the things that this, what you said made me think about is that it helps me sort of see the happiness of my partner, the things they're excited about that they're taking. I might not appreciate it that much, but just the happiness they have from doing it, and it's new and it's interesting and they're growing. And because I have the same experiences, you know, and my partner might not appreciate everything I do either, but it's sort of like you made me think about sort of the happiness of seeing other people thrive and do things. And that's, I haven't really thought so much about that in this context, but I think that is another sort of lens that sort of comes up through this.
Yeah, appreciative joy.
Yeah.
You know, where you connect with someone, you're happy from someone else's joy. That's wonderful, too.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have more time if anybody else wants to share anything about where you find happiness or when you don't find it or combinations or laughter. Oh, good. Lyndall, go ahead.
This isn't a funny thing. Well, actually, I don't know if I should say this funny thing before I say the thing I was going to go say. But sometimes when I think about funny Dharma things, I think about, I think it was Sharon Salzberg. I don't know whether she did this or some student she had do this, but they were doing metta, you know, and part of it is, you know, may you be happy, may you be peaceful, may you live with ease. And either her or this person found themselves saying, may you live with fleas. And I'm like, oh, that's like, I wouldn't wish that on my most difficult person. That's terrible. But every time I think about it, I laugh. But that wasn't what I was going to say. I was going to say that when you were talking about the times when things really are difficult and finding sukha, and Carrie mentioned people talking about that too. How can I find sukha in these really difficult times? And you were mentioning that maybe you can't exactly find sukha, but can bring compassion. And I was thinking also there are times when we might not be able to bring sukha, but we might be able to bring equanimity of just being able to be with that difficult thing. So that's another option.
Yeah. Because it's, you know, gradual. We're all learners, right? Some teacher just said recently, we're either a beginner or an experienced beginner. And I liked that. Judith, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, if nobody else is going to talk, I'll say something. I totally agree that humor is essential. It is absolutely essential to any spiritual path. In fact, it's essential to just surviving life for as long as we survive it. But I do find that sometimes I catch things immediately and think they're funny, like, oh, there goes my mind again, ha ha, you know. And other times it just takes a while, and I suppose it's a question of how deep the reaction goes, how strong the conditioning is behind that reaction, you know, that it really varies a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a phrase when I think back on things, and it's, what was I thinking? You know, it's just like, what was I thinking? And I'm laughing. But at the time, wasn't like that at all, unfortunately.
Yeah, so then I think the challenge is not to beat myself up because I didn't go there immediately, that there was a process.
Yeah.
Right. And be grateful for the process.
Right.
Be grateful for the understanding that comes from the process. Yeah.
Humility and patience.
Yeah. We're still experienced beginners, right?
Right. Experienced beginners. Candace, thank you, Judith, for bringing that up.
That kind of reminded me several things that we've been talking about this lovely practice that I've been doing. I've been working with Justin Mickelson's book, The Dharma of Healing, for over a year now. And in his meditations, when he's going to take you into something rather difficult, he suggests as you're relaxing that you might just bring a tiny little smile to your face, just to try it and to put your hand on your heart, just to bring affection and compassion to this difficult emotion that you're going to be working with. And it's so interesting how just that little, you know, you can think, I don't want to do this. And then he has you welcome a difficult emotion. Welcome. I know you're trying to protect me, and I really appreciate this, and I care, and I'm here for you. And just that, you know, moving from dukkha to sukha, that's just this really subtle thing that helps you. It helps you bear it. It helps you stay with it. And it's so subtle, and it's actually nurturing to bring this up and to I've just found it so powerful to do that practice.
Thank you for sharing that, Candace, because I've had experience with that in first not wanting to smile, you know, like, I don't feel like smiling. I'm not going to smile, you know. But in thinking about the connection between the body and the mind, the breath, the body, the mind, they're all connected. And Carrie was saying that they found there was research. They found it research-wise, scientists, the connection between the body, all parts of the body. So it would make so much sense that if you smile, that's the body, and it's going to connect with the mind too. You know, it's going to connect. It's not all these separate pieces. And it's And I had an experience really recently where I was listening to something, and it was a guided meditation. And they said something, and I thought, oh, it was like an insight. Oh, that is so true. That is really the way to happiness, or something like that. And I was smiling. And then the next line of the guided meditation, and I didn't realize I was, but I was smiling, was, and if you can, just bring a smile to your face. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm smiling. I am smiling. So I think just appreciating that connection between the body and the mind is really, really helpful for happiness. Yeah. And for noticing when we're unhappy too. Yeah. Relaxation. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? We've had a lot of sharing. So I appreciate everybody who's listened and shared, and we can close early and people can get out in a beautiful solstice day.